I think in today's time, all we're doing is just stuffing our faces, snacking too much. I think if you have a more stable glucose level in your system, it's more healthy. And just snacking is, you know, all these spikes is not very good. So intermittent fasting really, it really helps with your steady blood glucose. You know, you should give your stomach a rest. It's just like every other thing in your body. You know, we have rest days. So I don't understand why we don't do, you know, even a 12-hour fast is good. If you're having a late night snacking in the morning, you know, I forgot what it is, but like 6 to 8 hours, your stomach needs to do a full cleanse. And if you, you know, if you have a midnight snack and you're eating at 7, you're not giving that time. And intermittent fasting is actually easier to lose weight than actually calorie deficient, calorie deficit. So, like, if you have like, if you do a calorie deficit diet, and we know this doesn't work. Everyone does it. No one loses weight from it. And the reason is your body is very clever. It knows, you know, I'm getting 1,500 calories a day, so I'm going to drop my metabolic rate to 1,500. And then if you start at 2,000, you've gone to 1,500 and your metabolic rate's gone down to 1,500 and you do it not losing weight, then you're like, okay, and you feel terrible. Then you start, okay, I'll eat 1,700 because it's still less than 2,000. But you don't know that your metabolic rate's gone to 1,500. So you're actually eating 200 calories more than your metabolic rate than you're actually putting weight on. And because you're feeding so often, you have all these insulin spikes and you know, you don't have access to body fat. So, you know, you feel terrible. Where if you intermittent fast and you still just keep, just because from what I've read, weight loss is more of a hormone problem, not hormone balance, especially not problem, but more hormones. Because, you know, you cannot say, you know, 100 calories of oil has the exact same effect as 100 calories of white bread. It's a totally different reaction on the body. So if you do time restriction or intermittent fasting where you actually consume nothing for 12 hours, that's 12 hours your body is forced to break down fat. It's actually really forced to break down fat. And when you do eat, you know, there's a very less chance you're going to overeat in that small window also. I would prefer to do 16-8. I think that's much better. And once you get used to it, you know, and like an OMAD, which is 1 meal a day, is to me, you save so much time and you just feel better. You feel lighter. You know, you're not lethargic. Your stomach's not full, always working. And I think just from doing a few grand tours, you just see how much stress we put on our stomachs. Like that goes to the extreme, you know, when you were just eating always when you're racing. And then you're sort of like, this is not healthy. And then you look at what we do at home. We just do it just less amount of food, but we're always eating. So I think it's good just to give your body a rest and give your gut a bit of a clean. And
yeah, that's awesome. I guess my last question on then, you start off, you are pro-carb, because I know some people will hear this and be like, oh, Adam Hansen, he's fasting all the time and he's into fat burning, but you are pro-carb. So you're still getting those carbs in before hard sessions, maybe not for the long, easy sessions, but people do need to eat carbs if they want to go fast on a bicycle. Is that correct?
100%.
Okay, thank you. Woo! I was like, he's going to break down everything I believe in today. This is like horrible.
Yeah, you know, I've had a few people like, nah, it's, you know, fat. You can get so much energy from fat. It's true, you can get a lot of energy from fat, but you know, you're limited on the flow of fat being an energy source, where carb is right there. I believe so much in fat metabolism training and this type of fasting that because the importance of glycogen as an energy. I can be the best sprinter in the world after a 200-kilometer race if he has zero glycogen in stores and I still have, you know, 20-30%. Like when you are absolutely glycogen depleted, you cannot beat anyone in sprint. So the whole idea is improve your fat metabolism to save those carbs for the final, because that's what you see. If all the sprinters, like you see in 100-meter sprint races on the track, the fastest guy wins every single time. He has all the energy that he needs and he does it every single time. In cycling, sprinters don't always win every single time. It's not always the fastest guy. Yes, there's tactics, lead outs, things like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's no reason why a sprinter can't win Milan-Sanremo, because it's all to do with how much energy they have at the end of the race. You know, some stages are really hard, and it's all about saving energy and keeping the glycogen stores as long as possible so you can actually use that in the race where it's important. And that's why I really believe in fat metabolism as training, because you need the sugar. Sugar is so important. And when you do efforts, have high carb, because you've got to train how much carbs your body can absorb per hour, and then you can do your maximum numbers on the interval days. So yeah, I'm full pro carb.
That's awesome. It's really good. You also make a really good point too. I was, you know, when you're talking about sprinters, there are guys that will see, you know, everybody loves in WKO, like the watts per kg chart. And like, I've got a killer sprint, but like, I just can't seem to win. I'm like, well, cause you're not getting yourself to the end of the race with the ability to unleash the sprint. Like, you're getting dropped because of aerobic stuff, and the race is 3 hours. It's not like you're going to do this one-off effort. So it's like a similar kind of analogy in my head of thinking that's the nutrition side of the power side of, like, you got to get to the point of the race to where you can be really good at what you're good at, if that comes out the right way. People talk about, you do these grand tours, you see these physiological changes in your body, you come out this different rider. Did you ever start noticing that, just like, man, and maybe that's why you started thinking like, I can start banging these out more and more? Is it just, you kind of alluded to this fat metabolism. What were you seeing as a rider? Like, you know, you're also doing these at such a young age. I think maybe 21 or 22 is your first one. You know, how did that affect your trajectory as an athlete, do you think?
I actually started at not such a young age, but I found the more I did, the easier it got. But also mentally, to me, I know that I always have in my head, no matter what happens, you'll be sleeping in your hotel bed tonight. If it's a bad day, good day. If you get dropped, if you cannot eat that day because of something you ate at the hotel that was bad. So for me, just mentally, it was like, you always finish. It would be really hard not to make time limit. Okay, on some of the mountain stages, it can be quite easy. But I wasn't so bad of a climber. Mentally, it was definitely, I think, what really helped me the most. I really believe that you could just stream your ground to it, any form, and I'll just build up that form as the race goes on. And you know, you can there's tactics where you can hide easier in the bunch and, you know, don't do stupid things and move up on the bunch when the hill starts and slowly drift off to the back of the bunch over the top of the hill. So, you know, you can save 60 watts up on a climb doing something like that. But yeah, definitely the more grand tours I did, it improved me as a rider. I think, you know, racing, I don't believe is the best form of training. But a grand tour stages, you can make it in a good way for training, in the sense where you can say, you know, I just go in the last group today, or I want to go in the first group just to improve a bit better. So you can modify the race to make it go your way.
Would you say the best type of training for the non-savage riders that are not Adam Hansen, like a well-rounded, we kind of talked about this before though, but like a well-rounded, try to hit all the energy systems, see what your race demands of you. Just to try and boil this all down to one thing, you've hit on a lot of different points. Get a little bit of everything and maybe in some progressive form, or what's your kind of like, if you had to spit something out, what's like a big overarching theme of training that, it's a hard question because everybody's individualized. But
what would work for anyone? I really believe everyone should do sprint training regardless. So I go that? Out. Because my coach, when he was explaining to me, you're going to give some sprint training, I was like, well, I'm not a sprinter. He was like, yeah, but if you come to a race in a breakaway with one other guy, how are you going to beat him?
Right.
And it's true. You always sprint. You always sprint. And the maximum your sprint is, the easier everything underneath is. So if you do an attack in a race, and it can be any level, if you do an attack and it's at your maximum, that's going to hurt you. But if you improve your maximum, and so let's say your maximum is 1,000 watts, in a sprint, and you're doing attacks at 1,000 watts, you're doing maximum effort every single time you're following moves or doing attacks. And if you can improve your sprint from 1,000 to 1,100, and then you're doing attacks at 1,000, it's actually like 11% less effort. Mm-hmm. And that'll add up over time because you do a lot of attacks. And when you're doing sprint training, this is for anyone, do 8 seconds, maximum effort, 3 minutes rest. Don't do more than 8 seconds because you produce lactic acid. And if you do that, your next one's not going to be good. If you just keep it short, just explosive power, then you can do 5 of them in a row. So 8 seconds, 3 minutes, 8 seconds, 3 minutes. Everyone can be max effort. And that's what you're training, explosive power. You're not training an energy system. You're not training a lactic acid. You just want explosive power. So everyone can do something like that. So do that on the first day of your set. So you're always fresh, maximum power. After that, do some type of intervals of high heart rate, can be 40-20s, where you go 40 seconds on, 20 seconds easy, 40 seconds on, and just do 5 to 10 minutes of them. When you're looking at a training file, you should see your heart rate go like this. If it's plateau, it's too hard. You have to see some type of, if you see too much recovery, mm-hmm. and then you can up the power. So you can really judge it. And that's based on how good your recovery is. If you're just flatlining, if your heart rate's just flatlining, then you're not recovering. So mm-hmm. you gotta have little tweaks.
So the session overall would be just too hard if it's going in that upwards. Okay.
If you're doing 40-20s and your heart rate's just always climbing or just stable, then the 40 seconds too hard. Just drop the 40-second power a little, and you should. What will happen is your power will go up and your heart rate will be slightly delayed, then your power drop, and then your heart rate will still go up and then slowly go down, and then it'll start to cross. But you got to see that. And the faster your heart rate goes down, the better your recovery is. This is really good because in a race, there's guys that are going to be surging. You're going to surge with them, heart rate goes up, and then you good tempo, or it's on the limit, and then you got to recover a little, another surge happens, and you go with that surge, or a mountain, in all races, even gravel races. If it's a little incline or the terrain gets more difficult, it's going to be harder effort. So this is something you want to train also. And I really believe strength training, everyone should do this in some form. So lower cadence, not too low. I think people go a bit overboard when they're doing like 45 cadence or 50 cadence. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it took me years to work out that I actually do really good strength training at 65 cadence at higher power instead of 45 at lower power. Same torque, but I just feel like it's not good for my knees. It never really happens in a race. And then when you do your long rides, do them super constant. It can be super easy, but it can be constant. So this means if you stop at a traffic light and you start again, don't sprint. Don't tap into a different energy system. If you come to a climb, what I find is when I do long rides, I like to do it by myself because if you come to it, because people get annoyed. People really get annoyed because I like to ride. If I say, okay, 230 watts, I'm on a flat, come to a climb and they do like 400, even if it's for 10 seconds, different mm-hmm. energy system, it's going to take 20 minutes before you tap back into your baton talisman. And when you go like 230 or 240 up the climb, it's super slow. So the riders get annoyed because they're like, hey, why are you going so slow? But when you get to the top and you hold that power, they're like, hey, why are you going fast now? I was like, I'm actually doing the same pace the whole way. And that's what you should be doing. So, and also when you go downhill, try and hit the 230, mm-hmm. 240 watts, whatever your power is. And, if it's a three-hour ride, three-hour, four-hour, four-hour, just do what you can. And I really believe if you just tick every box.
I love that, dude. I love it. That's because I have some people that were like, what's your methodology when they like ask about coaching and stuff? And so I started putting things together and I've become this like, people will give me hashtag no coast because I'll tell people if you don't live in like a mountainous area, if you go out for a long ride, try and keep your zone one time less than 10%. Don't be coasting. Don't be dilly-dallying, but don't be going into zone 4. So I'm like, well, I got a hill. I'm like, dude, you have 21 gears or how many gears on your bike? Shift the bike. So I want to ask you about this sprint thing. So this is really interesting. I've been trying to get my head around some of this in terms of, do you use WKO at all?
No.
So they call FRC like your anaerobic capacity or Watt Prime from Golden Cheetah. The 8 second, you made the comment of not going too much longer because then you're creating the lactic acid. And what I was gathering from some different webinars and other coaches and blogs and blah, 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 is that when, we're twisting these dials, you can try to make yourself too anaerobic and therefore it might push your FTP down. Because if you undergo glycolysis more often, then you're going to create more of those hydrogen ions, which is going to create more of the burn and you're going to fatigue sooner. Is that why you keep it at 8 seconds? So you're hitting it, but you're not elongating this like massive anaerobic burn and turn yourself into like this anaerobic rider.
I feel you can do other intervals to train that.
Okay.
And with explosive power, it's just training the muscle. Just extraining the nerve signals from, you know, like you're in the race and someone goes and you got to react really fast. So it's it's this type of training. It's muscles at maximum load. So, you know, 25 kilometers an hour speed, 75 cadence, or maybe 20 kilometers, it's 70 cadence, where it's not, you're not starting 110 cadence. You got to have that wind up. It's for, so explosivity, for your to fire your neurons. So, the muscles react faster. And I think the most important is to learn your gears, because so many riders fail at this, where they do no sprint training. They come towards the end of the race and, you know, it can be a group of 15 guys and you're racing for a 10th and they're like, nah, is it too hard gear? Like, you really, when you do this type of training, you really learn your gears well, and you learn how to change gears through a sprint also. Because a lot of amateur riders and even pro riders struggle with this, where, you know, there's a certain part in the pedal stroke where you can really hit the gear and smash it through, and you can have a real clear power line. So, yeah, it's more explosivity that these 8 seconds is. And, you know, if you want to train the lactic side, it's more, you can't do everything. I believe in every form of training, you should do everything 100%. So if you're sprint training, 100%. Fat burning, 100%. Intervals, 100%. Rest day, 100%. Don't try and do a 3-hour easy rest day. This is not a rest day. And then expect to do good sprints the day after.
Man, I got some dudes trying to go on rest day and going and lift heavy deadlift squats. I'm like, bro, this is rest day. And they're like, but I'm not biking. I'm like, dude, you're tapping into you're shredding. That is a hard at. No, don't do that, please.
Yeah.
Dude, and super smart dude, obviously. People are probably like, dude, this guy's, you're just a unique person. And then we've got the whole engineer side, the shoe side. I don't want to take up all your time. So people can watch Google videos of Adam talking about why he built his own shoes and stuff, and really, you just started tinkering with things. But like, have you always been playing and toying with stuff, and kind of where are things going for you with Hansino, the shoe and bike company? And then you have, I don't know, do you own part of Leomo, or you're into Leomo, or can you give us some story on all that?
Yes. Yeah, so, I work for Leomo, huge fan of Leomo. To me, Leomo is the new gear, as like the power meters when they first came out. People didn't like them, too confusing. The power went up and down. It was too complicated. Leomo really shows how to train properly. So if I was to give a rider a session, say, okay, go out and do 400 watts at 50 cadence, right, for 5 minutes, super hard session, right? I see the power file, I go, okay, he did 5 minutes, he did it all good. With the Lima file, I can see where he was like, he struggled, where he started to move around, where his hips started to move, if he has a weakness on the left or right leg, and if it's on the top of the stroke, if it's the soleus muscle, if it's further down, if it's which other muscle in the calf area, and when you have ankling, right? So when you sort of pedal and the power's too much, and you sort of have this effect, then your leg angle range moves more, and you can see all this in a Leomo file. In a Leomo file, you can really see what the athlete does. And when you're doing this also, you can actually see, okay, that power's way too hard. He did it. But you can see the body's moving too much, and you can lower the torque training. So if you're doing SFR training or some type of torque training, you can really say, okay, the 400 is too much. Let's try 350. So you hold really optimal form. And because if you don't have the motion, you just think, yeah, he hit the numbers, he did, and that's it. But, you know, he could be like, he could cause injury, or maybe, yeah. So with the Leomo, there's no hiding.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. There's now, with Zwift being so popular, I'll look through intervals, and I've actually started checking cadence way more, because I'm like, this person is at 50 RPMs. Like, they're clearly just like, blah. I'm like, that was, we're not doing this right.
Yeah. And also, like, you really see everything. And, you know, when you do like 40-20s, when a coach would give 40-20s to our back in T-Mobile days, they'd be like, you must do it seated. where riders would cheat a little. They would stand up, do the first, you know, 10 seconds, accelerate, get the power up nicely. When the power starts to plateau, then they sit down. And it's only like a 28-second effort because you're just using your body weight to get the power up. Mm-hmm. With the Lima file, you can see, okay, he was standing up at that period there. You see everything. So it's really, in this sense, it's really good. And you can really, let's say, alter your training based on how you ride, not just on the power figures, because you want to hit those power figures in the optimal form. So this is why I'm a huge fan of Limo, and yeah, I do a lot of the research and development there in the company. With the Hansino, I make the shoes. I do it for some riders. I don't like doing it. There's no money in it. It's a lot of time. I love it, but it's just a lot of time. And for me, I prefer more trying to improve them for myself. So I'm making a triathlon shoe at the moment where the heel comes out so you can put your foot in on the bike, and it's going to be a seamless shoe. So it's going to be like, because at the moment I have the flap going on the inside, and then you have the lacing on the inside of the shoe, and I want to have everything internal. And so I'm working on a new, so I have more fun with this than trying to sell it to other people. I'm doing custom handlebars at the moment, especially for triathletes, because I find that it's just terrible what's on the market, in the sense if you buy a bike, that what you can do with the current systems is not very good. So I'm doing that. I'm building a pool. I was just doing it 10 minutes before I came running up here to talk to you. It's like maybe 2 days away from finish, which would be really good. What else am I doing? And when the pool's finished, I'll be working on my bike. So actually I've got parts of it like here. This is the part for the floating chainring. I just 3D printed this part. And this is the section where I'll be so the front chainring is going to float with the back. So when you change gears to the back, the front chainring will follow the back. So you always have a dead straight chain line. I just 3D printed this part, and these are the linear bearings that'll slide. I have the drowler part sitting here because I'll be making the, I'll show a little bits of it.
This is awesome.
I'm just using red plastic. This part here, I 3D print. Since the drowler part, so this is going to sit. What am I going to do with the bike is, most drowlers are designed. You have your cassette, and the drowler is attached here and goes underneath. Mm-hmm. Right, so it goes sort of like this. What I'm doing is I'm putting the drowler in front of the cassette. Okay. So there'll be nothing hanging out here. And the drowler would just hang straight down. It's actually downstairs. So the drowler just hangs straight down, and it just slides left to right to match the cogs at the back. So I'll just have a stepper motor in there. And this is just the prototype of that. So I'm working on this part of the rear drowler. The front one would be sliding, floating. So it goes with the back, just to make it more straight train line. Because, you know, if you look at guys like Tony Martin's bike, everyone looks at his TT bike, oh, he's got a 58 tooth chainring, how can he push that? But he never pushes 58.11. He pushes like a 58.15, just so the chain is dead straight. Because if you're pushing 11s like here, so these guys like Rowan Dennis, Victor Campanats, and all that, they pick the chainring sizes based on what's in the center of the cassette.
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Yeah. So don't think they're pushing 50. Like Tony cannot push 58.11. But you know, no one wants this. You know, this aggressive chain line.
Oh my God. Okay. That's so interesting. So
what I like to do is have a really closed block. So on this what I'm testing on, there's only one tooth difference on all of that. So the block is really close. And then I have every single gear I want. And there's no big jumps. And because the chainring will float with it, that means that I don't have chain cross and I can have any gear that I want. Because a lot of TT guys in World Tour, they really select the big chainring based on what they have at the back. So I'm working on this at the moment. But this I'm just not doing so much. Pool, first the bike was number one priority, but then with all the closes of the pools, I haven't swam. I have not swam since November.
Oh, wow.
And I have a race 2nd of May. So I got to get this. For me, it's like, I got to get the pool.
Get the floaties off. Let's start doing some.
Yeah. So I can get to swimming. I'm going to use the Ridley I got now for until my bike's built. And once the pool's done, I can swim. Then I'll work on my bike. And at the moment, I'm just focusing on those things. Yeah.
I don't want to overstay my welcome. Can I ask you two last questions?
For sure.
Gravel, any interest in that? You going to be getting into that at all? Or is that like, wait, like, no, I'm swimming, I'm running, I'm doing triathlon for now?
Actually, what I'd like to do is I'm going to do the Crocodile Trophy, which is the mountain bike in Australia,
okay.
Mountain bike stage race in Australia. And I'd like to do other adventure stage races like this because this is my belief. I think this is going to sound strange because I've never really done a triathlon. I have this feeling that triathletes are not really training as best as they could. This feeling I have is running is so taxing on the body. It's so taxing on the body. And I feel, and I know I have to run more, I do, but I feel triathletes run too much and they do too much junk miles in running to get endurance, where you can get that free on a bike without muscle damage. So you can really build cardiovascular endurance, fat metabolism training. You can tap into energy systems on the bike without damaging muscles. So you can do higher volume and better quality training on the bike for your cardiovascular than the run. So what I like to do is focus a lot of my training on the bike and doing a lot of road races also, because cyclists are just so fit just because we can do 21 days of racing because it's not really damaging on the body. Well, you can't run a marathon 21 days in a row. You would be smashed after half a marathon. So what I like to do is a lot of gravel races, mountain bike races, road races, to really help with my endurance. And then with the Liamo, there's a running section where everything's on running form. So I'm actually more working on my form and my muscle strength on the run, to run in a more economical way. Just to give you a really boring 2 seconds on what runners do wrong, is you probably heard of midfoot runners and heel strike.
Yeah.
So
running, but I always get injured, so I don't do it anymore.
This is why, and it makes total sense. And I don't know why people didn't think of it before. When you do heel strike, you put your foot in front of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're slowing your body down. You're actually braking.
Right.
So you put your foot inside, and you're actually absorbing all that energy, and then you push off. Where with at Lima, we measured how the Kenyan runners run. They run midfoot or toe, and they put their foot underneath them and propel forwards. So there's no braking motion. There's no put your foot in front, absorb the impact, go over and push off. It's just behind. And because of that, none of the limbs are under stress. Where most runners that are not a good form, they put the leg in, so they're going forwards with all their body weight, and a lot of them are overweight. Well, when I say overweight, not like Kenyan runners, so they carry a bit more mass. They put their foot in front of them on the heel, and they're absorbing everything, all the energy, slowing themselves down, and then pushing off. This repetition of absorbing the energy, braking, and pushing off. So I do a lot with the Liamo in the sense of just becoming efficient. I just want to be as efficient as possible, where it's all midfoot strike running. So I do a lot with on the running side to be more efficient instead of just going out and smashing miles. So going back to your question the long way, I want to do these type of events. I want to enjoy life now, pick my races. This is what I'm really enjoying after a time, where I can just pick any race that I want to do and I can do it. And gravel races, like I love mountain bike races, and Crocodile Trophy was more like a gravel race on my mountain bike. It was more gravel terrain, not so difficult, not so technique, and it was more longer stage races. So I'll be getting, I'll do any race that's available at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, do you ever go back to Australia? What's that big one in New Zealand, which is not far from you guys down there? Is Tarn something? I think it's a big gravel race.
What about this one? Yeah.
Yeah, you should go smash that. That'd be pretty sick. I guess my parting question, I have 800 others, but I'm going to let you go do your thing. What's, the Liamo, it's pronounced Liamo, is that correct?
Liamo,
the system, what do you buy? What do you have to do to get in the game of that? And what's the learning curve?
Well, there's a few ways you can do it. You can just buy the system yourself. There's a 5 sensor kit, which is what I recommend to get. There's a 2 sensor kit also. So you get the 5 sensors. So I didn't really prepare for it. So the quad sets, you can put on your thigh, one on each thigh, one on your foot, on the top of your cycling shoes, running shoes, one on your pelvic. And basically that shows almost your full motion. It shows how much, first, the easiest thing, if you're symmetrical, if your legs are doing the same thing, that's the first thing, how much movement your hips. So you've got pelvic rotation, pelvic rock, pelvic angle, if you're leaning more forwards than that. It shows how smooth you are also on the bikes with leg smoothness. So this is where your thighs go up and down. A lot of riders, they actually have like this hesitant pause in their pedaling stroke. So you can identify these things. It shows your dead spot score. So this is the dead spot score is not actually what people think as you stop pedaling. A dead spot is more when there's a sensor here. So you have your gyro X axis, and what it measures is the change. So as you go through, you know, because if your foot's not stable, then you're activating legs in your calf to try and maintain that foot stable. So we actually detect the changes in your pedal stroke there. And the idea is just to have a more fluid motion, so the more power goes directly to the pedal. It's definitely people are scared of information they don't understand. And it just takes a little patience. But, you know, with the app, it's got explanation about everything. Like for me, I understand it very well. Lima also offers a service where they, you know, you can do your training and you can submit a file, they do a full file breakdown. They'll show you weaknesses if the training's too hard, the emotion. So you can learn that way. But like, I don't think it's so complicated.
Yeah, no, I like trying to take on new things, new tasks, new. At the end of the day, I mean, I want to try to get better, and you can only do so many interval workouts. I got to go do this fasting thing now, but I'll get my fat metabolism up, and I'll have to look for the next thing. So now I got to do this Limo. So, dude, we'll end on that, man. This was incredible. Seriously, thank you so much for doing this. This is gonna just shed so much amazing light and knowledge onto a ton of cyclists and inspire people to go out there and get after it like you have been doing for a really long time. So best of luck, man. I hope I can buy you a coffee or something, cross paths in real life. Good luck with your triathlons. I won't be doing one of those, but maybe the gravel race. And yeah, thank you again. Truly appreciate it so
much. Good. And I'll hold you to that coffee one day.
Deal. I'm in. I got to interview him and I get to buy him a coffee. Hell yeah.
Sounds good.
I'll talk to you later, Adam.
Thanks. Have a good one.
You too.
See ya.